Good evening, everyone, and I'd like to welcome you to the debut episode of Coliseum Chronicles, The Penalty Box, the podcast that's your go-to place for all things Islanders Enforcer. I'm your host, Joel Lazito. In the coming weeks, I'm going to bring to you the stories of many players who've dropped the gloves for the Islanders organization. So it's not just guys that have suited up for the Islanders. You'll hear stories from guys who have been Springfield Indians, Capital District Islanders, Salt Lake Golden Eagles, Grizzlies, both Denver and Utah, and Bridgeport Sound Tigers. So it's not just big league guys, it's professional guys at all levels if they've played in the organization and I can get them to chat with me. Then you're going to hear it. You're going to hear some really, really great stories. And it's an honor to bring it to you. This episode is just an introductory episode, kind of tell you what to expect and give my opinion on something that's been bothering me lately. Like I said, I'm Joe, and you might be wondering what qualifies me to bring you this podcast. I don't really know if you need any qualifications based on some of the podcasts I've heard, but let me give you some of mine here. So in the 90s, there is a magazine and that was published in Europe, only in Norway, Sweden, and Finland. It was called Pro Hockey Magazine, and I had a monthly column in it called Ice Fighters. I did that for a few years, but unless you were in those countries around that time, you've never seen it. I do have the magazine to prove it, though. I have that, and it was actually a really nice magazine. It's unfortunate it was never published in English. I think it would have done very well over here. Probably the biggest thing I've done that you may have seen was for 3 or 4 years, I was a major contributor to Hockey Star's annual Tough Guys magazine. I was the one who did the rankings. Like I said, I think I did that for 3 or 4 years. I took a lot of heat for some of the rankings, but I think I did an okay job. I threw in the occasional feature every now and then, but that was a lot of work, but it was a lot of fun. And when they stopped publishing the magazine, that was a bit depressing for me because I really, really enjoyed doing that. But I have some copies of that as well, so I always have the memories there. If you are familiar with the Bad Boys series by Stan Fischler, I had a section in that book. I believe it was the second book, More Bad Boys or something like that, where Stan had a gentleman named Eric Servita rank fighters in certain categories. And this, I think the fourth installment was the one that I was in called Ultimate Bad Boys. And myself and David Singer and one other person, we basically took what Eric did and put our own spin on it. And that was a lot of fun also. So, and I'll never forget doing that because that was before, it definitely wasn't before computers or typewriters, but it was before I had a computer and I definitely didn't have a typewriter. So I had to handwrite all of that and then fax it to Stan's interns. But again, that was a lot of fun. In the mid-2000s, I had a website called Islanders Enforcers where I brought an interview to you guys every month. It was a written interview, so it wasn't anything verbal like this will be, but I interviewed some pretty cool guys. They're a lot shorter than what these interviews will be, but I had a fun time doing that. I've also been published on the Islanders website a few times. I did a feature when the Islanders fleeced Montreal and acquired Aaron Asham for Maris Tchaikovsky. I did a feature on Jimmy Cummins when they got him from Anaheim. And I think I did a top 10 or a top 15 Islanders Enforcers piece for them. That was many years ago. I don't even think they're on the internet anymore, but hopefully one day I'll be able to find them. I've done other stuff, nothing as big as those things, but you know, like I said, I've been out there. It doesn't make me any better or worse than anybody. It's just stuff I've done, and I'm happy I've done it. So why am I doing this podcast? I am 49 years old. I'm a lifelong Islanders fan. I'm a lifelong fan of the Enforcers. And when I moved to Long Island in 1984, I moved very close to the Coliseum, and it afforded me the opportunity to meet a lot of the guys who've done the job, not just with the Islanders, but with other teams. And, you know, I'm still friends with some of these guys to this day. So it's really a credit to them because they're so personable, they're so down to earth that they were always and still are very approachable. So it made me want to go back and, you know, when I was younger, get autographs, or I would used to trade fight tapes with these guys for our equipment, sticks and stuff like that. So it was a lot of fun, and you know, I'm glad. You know, obviously when you're a kid, you don't necessarily want to move away from your friends, but it worked out well for me in terms of being an Islander fan. Another reason this podcast will keep me involved in the game, the NHL in 2019, to put it mildly, is not my cup of tea. I do watch the Islander games, but I really can't watch any other matchup. Back in the day, that's a phrase I say a lot, so get used to that. But back in the day, a Wednesday night in February had Winnipeg visiting the Met Center to play the North Stars, and I'm watching it or I'm taping it. I could watch any matchup back then. Where now, it's just not, the game is not for me, the 2019 version. I still respect the athletes, but it's so different than what I grew up on that it's not really anything I have a lot of interest in outside of the Islanders. I find the sport pretty unwatchable nowadays. A big reason why I'm doing this is because I want to be a voice for these guys. I'm big on social media, not big in terms of following, but I'm on Twitter many times throughout the day, and not so much Facebook, but mostly Twitter. And I mean, if you're on Twitter, you see a lot of nonsense. So, and it just seems like there's so much criticism of hockey fights, hockey fighters, enforcers, coming from people who, I don't know, like I find it hard to believe I'm even justifying this, but I have some friends who are fight fans that enjoy the friendly banter back and forth with some of these people, and honestly, it's just not for me, so I figured I'd just address it here and say my piece, because I don't really get into the Twitter arguments, but you know, there's plenty of them out there. My friend Darren calls these people the vocal minority. I think he's pretty spot on with that. So, I mean, just thinking about why these people are so negative, I think first and foremost, they don't understand the role. The hockey enforcer, it's the most noble and selfless job in all of sports. I just think it's a job that people can't relate to. You may not have the skill to be a goalie or a pitcher, a quarterback, but you've played it, let's say, as a kid, so you can relate to it. You just can't relate to a guy that has a job description where you might have to end up in a fist fight. And I think a lot of these people can't understand that. So I think it's just easy for them to sit in their mom's basement and criticize. And, you know, especially now in social media where there's very little accountability for your comments, it's the complete opposite of the role of enforcer, which is pretty much all about accountability. So I just think they don't understand it. I think a lot of these people are younger people, maybe millennials, and I think a lot of people realize that a lot of the generation that this criticism is coming from, the younger group, it's pretty much a me generation. It's me, me, me. And if you're really focused on me, 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 you can't really focus on others. And that, I think, is a problem, because the role of enforcer is basically you're focusing on others. I don't think they understand the concept of team. I think they're so hell-bent on stats and analytics. These analytics people, I believe stats have a place in the game. I believe analytics have a place in the game. But these people who I call Corsi clowns. I think they're a bit rich. They're a bit too much. Analytics is basically numbers. It's a group of numbers, and you're going to take your numbers, and you're going to come up with formulas and algorithms, and you're going to spit them out. I guess my biggest problem with analytics is you can take score sheets from the games and give them to one of these Corsi guys or analytics. I don't know these stats that they make up now. And they can plug them into their computer, plug them into the algorithms, and spit out numbers. So the guy that's actually doing this didn't even have to watch the game. He's just taking the stats and making more stats. But he didn't watch the game. These guys watch the game. Some of these guys watch the games. But the fact is, I can't give you an analysis on a player that isn't an Islander, let's say, outside of the few players that I find interesting in the league, because I haven't seen them play. And I don't feel comfortable enough giving you an analysis just based on numbers. But if I could, how credible am I? Oh, I can spout off stats and everything like that, but if I've never seen them play, how much credence do you give me? So if you want to base the bulk of your arguments on analytics, I don't see how that even works if people that put out these analytics don't even have to put in the time to watch the games. So the analytics agenda, you can keep it. I'll prefer the eye test. Thank you very much. Getting back to the accountability that I had mentioned before, I mean, just to give you an example, if you're out with your girl or your boyfriend or your cat or whomever and someone takes advantage of them, your first instinct should be retribution. You shouldn't be standing there waiting for someone to show up to scold them or take them to jail or anything like that. You know, you should really want to just get even with that person and make them pay for it. Hockey has always been a sport where the players can police themselves and there's accountability, whether it's on that shift where the infraction occurs or later in the game. Think about it. Could you imagine back in the day someone taking a run at Mike Bossy, and you look over and Gillies and Nystrom and Howard are on the bench going, I'm not going to do anything because he'll probably get 4 minutes and, you know, that'll teach him a lesson. Or, well, you know, that was a rough hit and, you know, they had to take Mike off on a stretcher, but NHL player safety will take care of it and he'll get a stern suspension and I guarantee you that'll never happen again. I think there's plenty of people out there that criticize the role that really have no idea the journey that these guys took to get here. I think there's some people out there, you people that think these guys are built in laboratories are nuts. These guys took a similar journey to the NHL as your favorite players. So let me educate you a little bit here. When these guys were younger, when they're kids, their parents would get up middle of the night, 3, 4, 5 in the morning whenever there was ice time, and they'd bring them to their rinks because they'd play with their friends. And they could have been 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, 10 years old. And most of these guys, who you call cement heads and goons and everything, most of these guys at some point in their career were actually goal scorers. And maybe in their small towns, they were kind of a big deal. They were the star players, and they loved playing and, you know, scored 100 points a year, scored 200 points a year. Some of these numbers back when these guys are kids are pretty ridiculous. They're insane. And they're kind of the big fish in the small pond. And then as they go up a level, all of a sudden that pond gets a little bit bigger. And now maybe they're still the star of the team, but there's a couple of other players who are close to them in ability. And so they're still a big fish, but they're a big fish in a bigger pond. And now you go up another level. And maybe now you're approaching junior A, junior B levels where the pool of players is, you're pulling players from a much larger area. And now all of a sudden, you're not even the biggest fish on your team anymore. You're a big fish, but now there's even bigger fish from other places. You're not the star anymore. you're a contributor, you're maybe a first line player, second line player, but all of a sudden now, in only a few short years, you go from being the star player to not the star player. There's other star players on the team, and now all of a sudden maybe the transition isn't so easy for you, and you're struggling, and now you have a decision to make. You have the opportunity to continue your hockey career, and you really wanted to play. You had aspirations of going pro. You had aspirations maybe even playing for your junior team in your province, in your town. But now all of a sudden, it's not a gimme anymore. You're not a lock to make the teams, and if you do make the team, you're not a lock to get those first line minutes, those second line minutes, first or second D pair. Now you have to make a decision. Well, if I fight a little bit, that might get me noticed. And maybe it's not your first choice to do it, but at some point you make the decision, I'm going to make this part of my repertoire. And if you're good at it and you get noticed, it's something that could take you even further. And maybe now you get drafted, or you don't get drafted and you sign a free agent contract, or you get a PTO. And now you're in a training camp, in an NHL camp or a minor league camp, and you're there because of your entire skill set. And then who knows what happens from there. I guess my point is, to have to make a decision like this when you've always been one of the better players, but your drive and your desire is such that you want to do everything you can to make professional hockey your job. And the fact is, some of these guys have to make that decision, and they make it at a young age, and it works out for some of them and it doesn't work out for some of them. And I think it's a credit to them. It's a credit to those guys who had to make this choice to go through with it, because it's a very difficult role to fill. And the fact is, it shows tremendous character, it shows tremendous depth, and it shows tremendous intestinal fortitude to come up with something like this. And for you people to sit there and criticize these guys when you have never taken a stride in their skates is pretty ridiculous. You don't know the journey these guys have been through, but yet you'll sit there and you'll criticize them and you'll call them untalented and you'll call them goons and cement heads and all this other stuff, all this other garbage that you spew on your social media. You should show them a little more respect. I personally do not like Tom Wilson, but Tom Wilson can play the game, and I would never disrespect him by calling him. I mean, I think he's gutless, but he's in the NHL. And he's got many pro games under his belt, and he could play as long as he wants to play. But I'm not going to disrespect his ability. I mean, the fact is, there's some players listening to this, but the majority of the people that are listening to this aren't players. And combined, we have zero pro games. And the guy who you think sucks, and the guy who you think is really bad, and you think he's a piece of shit, well, guess what? He's got some pro games under his belt. There's somebody that has paid that guy to play professional hockey. And you and I have paid to watch him play professional hockey. So whether you like it or not, you can sit there and criticize these guys. But you know what? We'd all trade places with him in a heartbeat. So respect the journey these guys have taken. You know, don't just sit there and criticize because you couldn't do it. I mean, honestly, you can do it. There are guys who've done the job that have a hard time with it, and they've done it for a decade. They've done it for a long time because it's a hard job. And you sit there and you criticize, and the fact is, you for sure could not do this job. And say that I'm generalizing, but I'm pretty sure that if you're sitting there and you're denigrating these guys and you're insulting these guys, there's no chance you could do it. Because most people who sit there and are critical, you wouldn't have the balls to do it. So you know, think about that. Try to respect the journey a little bit. You know, not everyone is going to be a first line player. Not everyone is Wayne Gretzky. There's a team dynamic to hockey, and everyone has a role, and everyone fits in that role. The people who want fighting eliminated. Have you ever seen a poll of the players? It's basically unanimous that every poll I have ever seen where they poll the players about fighting, it's usually 90% or more the players want fighting in the game. So if the players want fighting in the game, who cares what we think? This is their job. The players want it. Keep it in there. Now you might be saying, well, you know, that's what they think they have to say or whatever. But I would say if you're a person who goes to games and waits for the players and talks to them after, talks to them before, and you're critical of a fighter, chances are you're a fan of a skilled player. And I hate to use that term because every player has skill, whether you like it, that skill or not, every player has it. But when I say skill player, you guys know what I mean. So let's say you're a fan of player X who is a first line player. Why don't you ask him how he feels about having an enforcer on his team? I guarantee he's going to tell you that he loves having him there. Guy like Brett Hull, one of the best pure goal scorers the game has ever seen, will tell you till he's blue in the face that it's guys like Tony Twist and Darren Kimball and Kelly Chase that are key to his success because they gave him the room to operate. Whether you believe that or not is up to you, but if you don't believe it, I have to say that you're a moron, because why would Brett Hull lie? Would you believe him if he said Adam Oates had a lot to do with his career because he would pass him the puck? I bet you would. But the fact is, it's a team game, and the Blues were a team. Adam Oates had a lot to do with Brett Hull's success, and so did the guys that I named. Tony Twist, Darren Kimball, Kelly Chase, and everyone else that's filled that role. So maybe, before you want to throw around your criticisms, you want to sling those arrows, just take a step back and say, okay, I respect what they've done. I respect the journey they've taken. That's my soapbox for that subject. So I will tell you right now, if you're listening, whether you're listening because you like the idea, you like the concept of this podcast, I appreciate that. And if you're listening because you think I'm a Neanderthal and you want to, rip me to shreds, thank you for listening. I don't care why you're listening. If you're listening, I really appreciate that. I always welcome your comments. I welcome your criticisms. And, you can always get me on Twitter. But if you're gonna tweet at me and you're going to chirp me, let me answer a few questions now. This way it'll save you some time. I am 100% old school. I'm unapologetic about it, and I'm proud of it. It's my life experiences that have made me who I am. I wouldn't change a thing. Well, maybe one thing, but that's not for today. But I don't know what to say about that, but I am who I am. I wouldn't, for the life of me, I wouldn't want to be younger, because I don't know where this world is going, but I'm very happy who I am, and very happy with my age. So let me just answer a few questions, because I'm sure that if this podcast becomes anything, I'm sure these are the criticisms that I'm going to hear. First and foremost, yes, I like hockey fighting, but no, I don't like CTE. I don't think anyone likes CTE. And to say that someone who likes hockey fighting likes CTE, you're an idiot. It's plain and simple. Nobody likes CTE. So if you're going to type that, understand that I'm going to read it and think you're a moron. I won't block you because I don't want to miss any more of your gems, but no, I do not like CTE. No, I don't live in the past. You might think I do, but I don't. I live this year, 2019, and soon it'll be 2020, and that's where I live. But I will say, if we ever find a time machine that works, all bets are off. Who knows? Maybe I will go back in time. But at the current moment, no, I do not live in the past. Feel free to post the Grandpa Simpson Old Man Yells a Cloud meme on Twitter. You can at me. I don't even know if I'm saying that right. But you can at me. I find that amusing. It's funny that the Grandpa Simpson meme, Old Man Yells a Cloud, he's passionate about something, I guess, but, you know, I don't have a problem with that. I actually take pride in that. So if you want to fire that my way, it'll make me laugh. Something else that made me laugh, which I got a lot of a couple of weeks ago when I voiced my opinion on the Don Cherry situation. If you tweet at me, okay, boomer, I'm going to laugh. For the record, I am not a boomer. I am a Gen Xer. But why let the facts get in the way of a tremendous, tremendous insult? So, okay, boomer doesn't bother me. There's really nothing you can say that's going to bother me. Like I said, I've had some life experiences that kind of put things into perspective for me. So anything you say to me on Twitter is really not going to bother me, but it will make me laugh probably. So you can go ahead and do that. You know, have fun with that. So, but if you're listening because you're interested in the theme of the show, then I will tell you that I have about 20 guests confirmed so far. Now, confirmed guests doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to bang out 20 straight interviews. Obviously, we're dealing with adults here, and most of these guys, I'm sure, work. They have jobs, I have jobs, so it's a matter of scheduling. But part of the reason why I hit these guys up before I had anything done with the show is so I can get a few episodes in the can, that's what she said, and then give me a little wiggle room because I'm sure I'm going to need it. So I think the format's going to be, it's just going to be career. We're going to talk about the career. Some guys maybe only played with the Islanders a short time, so maybe for those guys, I'll just focus on their time with the Islanders. But for the most part, it's going to be a career retrospective. Geez, I'm just right now at the moment, I'm doing my research for the Mick Vokoda episode, which might end up actually having to be two parts. I have so many questions. I found a few questions I had actually written down years ago that I completely forgot about. I think the Mick Vokoda episode is going to probably be one of the best just because of all the questions, all the details, and the fact that the guy played for the Islanders for a very long time. So what I'm hoping for is an episode every week. There'll be player episodes every other week because I'm limiting it to Islander organization and enforcers. Eventually I will run out of guests, so two a month of player interviews and maybe two episodes a month where I just blather on about maybe the week that was, if something happens, which lately it seems like something's happening every day, I could talk about that. Those episodes are not super important because I'm sure you don't really want to hear me, but it is something I'm figuring I may do just to kind of bridge the player interviews. So that's something that you might want to keep an eye out for. So today is December 2nd when I'm recording this. I'm hoping to get the first episode out within 2 weeks, and then after that we'll follow along with the weekly stuff. So my first episode is going to be with someone who I have been friends with for a very long time. His name is Dean Ewan. He played in the Islander organization. He played in Springfield, where he won a Calder Cup. He played in Capital District, and then he moved on from the team. If the name sounds familiar but you don't know Dean, you may know his brother Todd. He's been in the news. Not going to get too much into that because I'm really hoping we get into it in the interview with Dean, because it's pretty important and it's pretty topical lately, the events surrounding Todd's untimely passing. So but Dean and I have been friends for many years, and I know he's got some pretty awesome stories about his career. So I would urge you to definitely listen to it. He played in the Western Hockey League at a time when it was literally the Wild West. He played in the American League at probably the toughest time in that league's history. And he did have some exhibition games with the Islanders where he fought some guys who you've definitely heard of. I think it's going to be a great episode. Dean's a very smart guy, probably the smartest guy I know, and definitely the toughest guy I know. So I urge you to listen to that first episode. I think it's going to be a good one. And then as far as guests go, I mean, it's an Islander Enforcer podcast. I am going to do my best to get the big three, and I think you know who I'm talking about. Clark Gillies, Bob Nystrom, Gary Howitt, those are the big three. And I don't know what my chances are because I'm pretty much, if I'm anything, I'm small potatoes, but I may be no potatoes. But I'm going to try my best to bring some interviews with those guys to you. And I hope I'm successful. If not, I promise you the guys I get on here will entertain you. They're all good guys, and their stories are definitely worth listening to. So I'm going to cut it off here, and I just want to say thank you very much for tuning in. And keep an eye out for the Dean Ewan episode number one. And let's go, Islanders.